This seminar by Doug Gould, titled Lowering Stage Volume, is made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. It was recorded at our Worship God 2011 conference. Doug is founder and CEO of Worship MD.
I'm going to talk about some different things today. The loudness of the stage is a problem. We all know that. But how do we deal with it? It has more to deal with it than just the gear. What gear can we buy to mitigate the problem? Yeah, we try that. Shields, for instance. We spend $3,000 on plastic to shut the drummer up rather than give him lessons for $3,000. I don't understand that, but that's what we do. We think that technology will solve a lot of our problems. We're actually, there's a lot of relational things that we could talk about that would solve the problem first. And then if that's still a problem, then we can talk about technology. So that's what I'm going to do here first. We'll talk about some traditional approaches that you might want to consider to help lower the stage volume. Things that I've learned, not from an engineering degree, because I don't have one. In fact, I don't have a degree in anything. I'm a college dropout. Played in rock bands till I was 30. I got saved. Worked at a music store and was a rep for JBL. And then I was a sales manager for Tascam. And then I was U.S. market development manager for Shure Microphones for 7 years, where they let me just run rampant in the church because I'm a worship leader. And they let me spend all my time for 7 years teaching church volunteers how to do sound and all that kind of thing. And then that ended. Lord's timing was perfect, as it always is. I didn't think so at the time. 57 without a job, 5 kids in college. Thanks, Lord. But he set me on a path for those 7 years that I didn't see at the time, which was to start my own company and continue the mission of training the church, but as an independent. And I have 6 companies supporting me in this effort, which is great. I don't sell anything. I just teach 35 to 40 worship conferences a year. And here to share some of that experience with you. A lot of things I learned about sound, I learned in my bar band. How many musicians in churches have professional backgrounds playing in bands? How many? Okay. Very few. Less than 10% probably. How many sound guys in churches did that as a living? Or are you a cop, a housewife, or an insurance salesman who's doing sound on Sunday? Same thing, right? So this is not your vocation. So there's some things I learned that I can pass on to you because you never had that background experience to say, wow, that's how the pros do it. It's not really a physics, mathematics, you know, scientific thing. It's a common sense thing. Because believe me, guys in rock bands don't have a lot of physics, mathematics, and science. So these are things to consider. When we played in bar bands, way before monitors were invented, at the Shea Stadium, the Beatles played without monitors. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember that, but I do. They didn't have monitors. The whole term foldback comes from the screaming girls were screaming so loud the Beatles couldn't hear themselves. So after that, they started turning some of the PA back toward them. They called that foldback. That's where we get that term from. We folded back the PA so we could hear ourselves sing. But when we were playing in bars before monitors, we would have to do something a lot of musicians don't do anymore, which is listen. We just play now. We don't listen. We play and we hear ourselves out of a black box. We don't hear the room we're in. We don't hear the musician next to us. And playing music is as much about listening as it's about playing. It's about finding your place in the mix of a team. If it was a basketball team and one guy was just hogging the ball all the time and gunning it, that's not much of a team. The best teams pass the ball around and there's some balance there. Same thing with music. There's a rule of one, it's called. When I lead worship on Wednesday nights at piano, there's no band with me. So I have to cover everything. The rhythm, the melody, everything is me. Singing, playing piano. As soon as I add a player to that, I'm playing half as much. Both of us can't be playing 100%. We have to add up to one. It's trio, I'm playing a third of the time. Quartet, I'm playing 25% of the time. So you're going to get your rhythm section on the stage. And you're going to turn the monitors off. And you're going to turn the mains on. No vocalist on the stage yet. And you're going to say, guys, just jam for 5 minutes. and don't worry about the monitors. Just play. This is going to be a new exercise for everybody because nobody's used to this. Doing the mains first. So they'll play for 5 minutes with no monitors on. At the end of 5 minutes, you might say, all right, guys, what couldn't you hear? And you might hear, I couldn't hear the hi-hat. I couldn't hear the acoustic guitar. I couldn't hear this. I couldn't hear that. Okay. I'm going to start moving players closer to the things that they couldn't hear. I'm going to do it again. 5 more minutes. What couldn't you hear? I couldn't hear this or that. So you do that exercise until you can't move things anymore. And then those are the things you start putting into the monitor. The things that you can't hear acoustically, I put in the monitor. That make sense? I'll give you for instance. Worship leader is standing right in front of a drum set. Literally right in front of it. The kick drum was touching his pants. And the kick drum's going, and I'm watching his pant leg move, right? And guess what he's asking for in his monitor? Kick drum. More kick. Yeah, need more kick, man. I need more kick. So I stepped in and, whoa. Hey, turn around for me. What do you see? Drum. Kind of drum. Kick drum. And you're asking for more of it in your monitor, right? Yeah. Do you notice it's like literally hitting you in the butt? You don't feel that? He goes, yeah. He says, then why are you asking for it in your monitor? Because I always have. It's a habit. And old habits die hard. Might take 7 times to change a habit. Might take 70 times 7. But if you want to change that loudness on the stage, that is a good place to start. And I know for a fact, anybody who's tried this, it's kind of like the 10 lepers. Only one came back and said thanks. But I know if 10 people tried this, it's working for 10 people, but one guy said it works. I know it works all the time. Just try it. Just doing this will lower your stage volume significantly without even getting into in-ear monitors or drum shields or anything else. But it's taking the time. And you got to be willing to have a team that's willing to try this stuff. And if they aren't, then they're not on the same page. And I don't do relational counseling. I just do technical talks. The other thing the room will provide when they're listening to the room this way, they might notice for the first time that some energy is coming back from the room, especially low-end frequency response. So I'll say adding some subwoofers to your PA system could be a great way to lower the overall stage volume. We're trying to make little speakers do things that they can't do, especially for low frequency. So adding some subs to the room, just like in your home theater. Try turning your little sub on your flat screen off and just listen to little dinky things. That's what some of our churches sound like. And if musicians don't have a good foundation of low-end frequency response, there's no energy. They can't play. It all falls apart. That's your foundation. Not all rooms are going to do that, however. Some rooms are dead. Some rooms are too live. But it may work. Okay, so what do we need in the monitors? There's one thing I added here before the slide was made. We need 3 things in our monitor mixes. Pitch reference, so we know we're in tune, we're singing in tune. It's hard for some people, but she's the pastor's wife. What am I going to say? I can't. Nothing I can do about it. Pitch reference, a tempo reference, so I know where I am in the song, time-wise, what meter it is, how fast the song is. And I need to hear myself. Those are the 3 things in a monitor mix. You notice I didn't say a CD stereo mix of every instrument on the stage. If it takes me 10, 15 minutes to do a main mix, and you have 6 musicians in your band, how long do you think it takes to do each of their monitor mixes? At least 10, 15 minutes each? You don't have the time. You got to give them what they need, not what they want. I told you this is going to be a fun class. We have different PAs in the house. We have this PA, and then every monitor on the stage is its own PA, and every guitar cabinet, every bass cabinet, everything that's on the stage is its own system, believe it or not. And we have reflective areas, some churches more than others, vaulted ceilings, sheetrock, stained glass. So you have direct sound and you have radiated sound. One of the problems with monitors is they're facing the back of the church while the PA is facing the front. And if there's anything reflective on the back wall, it's going to reflect those monitors back into the congregation significantly later than when the mains did. That's just a factor of physics. Speed travel, sound, speed of sound is one millisecond, 1,000 feet a second. So if these are firing immediately to my congregation, and even if I have a monitor in the same line as this, and it's 10, 15 feet to a back wall, these are fired. 10 to 15 milliseconds later, it hits the wall. 10 to 15 milliseconds later, it comes up to the original starting place. You're 30 milliseconds behind the original time that the PA fired, which causes comb filtering. The sound is out of phase. Sounds muddy, hollow, distant, all kinds of explanations for it. So what we want to try to do is get those monitors from hitting off the back wall. Or, if that has to happen, treat the back wall with something that will absorb the sound or diffuse it. One thing I'd like to do is just get the monitors closer to the talon and aimed up at their head rather than facing more horizontal so it has a longer throw. So if you can shim them up with something, a brick, an old hymnal, a board, and get the talon to stand on top of it, you can literally turn your amplifier down according to the inverse square law. Every time you half the distance towards that speaker, you gain 6 dB, which is like increasing your power by 4 times, which means your amplifiers can come down. That's going to help reduce your stage volume. Don't let it reflect. Get it closer to our ears. Okay, so you've all seen the monitor screen, I'm sure. Bass cab, guitar cab, drums. I didn't put shields around them because I hate shields. All this stuff starts happening. It's just like, you know, my kid's a chef. If he saw this, he would say, well, you started out with like a clear broth, and I could see all the elements of the soup. You know what you're eating in a chicken soup. See the celery and the carrots and clear broth. By the time you're done with this, it's like a puree. You don't know what's in that thing. Could be an old sock. I'm not eating an old sock. But it just becomes a muddied mess. There's no clarity, there's no articulation, there's no intelligibility. Because everything is just washing over into the next area. One thing that really has an effect is bass frequencies. We learn this in a bar band again. I'm going to write a book someday. All the things that I'm teaching in the church that I learned from my bar band. Anybody know anything about wavelength? That different frequencies have different length? So high frequencies are very short. Bass frequencies can be very long. In fact, you have 6-string bass guitar players in here? Like the low string on a bass guitar like that? Could be anywhere from 35 to 40 feet long. So you're not hearing it on the stage when you're standing next to your amp and turning it up, thinking the sound man doesn't see it. Turning it up. The reason he sees it is because you're blowing the pastor's wife's wig off about 30 feet away. But you can't feel it because the wave hasn't developed to its crest yet. All you're hearing is some vibrations from your cabinet, but the wavelength is long. It's like a tsunami. So here's a trick we learned in the bar after, like, you know, I don't know what we were doing. We were messing around. Why don't you put the bass cabinet over there? Keep the drummer and the bass player together, because if I have the bass player next to the drummer, I can see his foot. I can see the tempo he's playing at. I don't need an audio reference. So try to keep the bass player and drummer together. That cuts down the volume. What about the bass cabinet? Well, the bass cabinet's over there, and we noticed that when it was over there, he turned his amp down because by the time it was over there and got to him, it hit him in the chest. But keep the drummer and bass player together, but put the bass cabinet on the far side of the stage. Doesn't work in every situation. It's just a suggestion. Try it. Especially if you don't have a sub. If you have subwoofers in your system, get rid of the bass cabinet. Go direct. Just get him some ears. There's no sense of getting rid of a bass cabinet just to have more bass coming through a floor monitor. You didn't achieve anything. You didn't gain anything. So if you get rid of a cabinet, try to get the person on headphones or earphones. Boop. Any of this stuff making sense yet? Yeah. I said it's all common sense. Really, the only physics I mentioned was the inverse square law, and that's because I saw it on Wikipedia or something. All right. This is why wedges, floor monitors, don't work. These reasons. Mixes compete. There's no separation. Comb filtering, you talked about that. Speakers interact with microphones, feedback. Okay, this is what I was talking about. Here's a monitor that was designed for a horizontal throw. You can see if the talent stands too close to it, it's going to go right past his knees. That's not going to help him hear anything. So he's got to, that's not going to work. He usually has to move back to be in the sweet spot. But if we move back, and I got to turn the amplifier up, that doesn't work. And it's also going to reflect off of a wall, typically. So here's our levels. Look pretty good right now. But then we didn't realize that Joey stopped at Starbucks on the way to rehearsal. He had a double shot cappuccino, and he's starting to play a little bit louder and a little faster. So then I have to turn up, and then everybody else is turning up. And before you know it, everything's in the red. It doesn't work. Okay, just a little general rule about sound in general. If I'm in Grand Central Station and my cell phone rings, and Grand Central Station is noisy, my cell phone would have to be 10 dB louder than the ambient noise for me to hear it. If my phone's the same level as the ambient level, there's no discerning which is which. You understand? So I have to either close this ear off, turn the volume up, to get over that volume that's around me. Same in any noisy environment. Same thing with your onstage monitors in your front of house PA. If your stage and your PA are the same level, there's no discerning. And the problem with having that happen is if my monitors are the same level as my PA, it's going to sound really muddy, not only because of the reflections, but because of bass frequencies again, they're omnidirectional. They're not directional. So they're going to lobe off the back of the monitor, and they're going to go into the first spaces of the church. It's really going to muddy up things. So your PA has to be 10 dB louder than the stage for you to be able to have some clarity to the sound for the congregation to listen to. Does that make sense? So I'm going to push that up. Okay? So my stage is at 95, and I got to be 10 dB louder. So my PA is now 105 dB. Good luck with that one. Multi-generational congregations. You're going to have young families running out with their infants, ears plugged up, elderly people pulling out their hearing aids, throwing them on the ground. So we got to get the stage softer than this. I mean, 105 dB is loud. But now the stage has gotten louder. And now I got to push that up. Now we're really going to have some problems.
Question?
Yeah.
When you say stage, are you referring to a combination of amplifiers or amplifiers?
Yeah, the overall volume of the platform that the worship team is on.
Regardless of direction.
Regardless of what?
Without respect to direction. So the bass is omnidirectional. So
right. Like, so if I went up to the stage and I just took a dB meter and I'm measuring level, a general level, somewhere in average, maybe different spots of the stage, there's guitar cabinets, there's a Leslie cabinet, there's wedges, there's drums, I'm going to get a level. That level has to be 10 dB less than the PA. Otherwise, don't turn the PA on. I've been in situations where they don't even have the PA on. They can't get it on. The stage is so loud, we can't turn the PA on. We don't have enough juice. Or we're killing people in the congregation. That's what we're talking about. How do we get those levels down so that the whole church has an awesome worship experience, not just the guitar player.
Do you mean it's got to be at least 10 dB quieter? Okay, so it can be.
There has to be a difference of 10 dB.
10 is the optimum. Like, could there be?
10 is optimum. 10 is optimum. It's a good average. I've seen 6 work, but 10 is what you're shooting for. All right, so I want to get these levels down, and how do we do that? Now we're going to go into some technical things to help alleviate. Thou art a shield about me. I just show this because I'm showing you a shield that actually works. And if it doesn't look like that, it doesn't work. I especially like this one because of the jacuzzi and coffee bar that it comes with. And I live in it now. It's only $800 a month, which is cheaper than my mortgage. You notice this has a top. It has backs that absorb. It has absorption on the bottom instead of clear plastic all the way to the ground. I see clear plastic just in the front with none of this. It doesn't work. Especially if there's sheetrock in the back. Because what happens is the drums will reflect off of that, off the sheetrock, and then back into the congregation louder than it was before they put the shield up.
So in relation to the set that was played last night where the drum shield was on the drummer and then they didn't do it this morning, as a sound man, what was the reasoning for doing it last night?
I was in our church uses a shield, and I have this problem every Sunday when I go in there and listen to it as a congregant, not as a on stage. This thing is horrible. My wife says, well, I think it really helps. I says, what's helping? Let's listen for a second. Close your eyes and listen. Pretend the shield's not there, or pretend the shield is there. But close your eyes and just use your ears. Do you hear the drums in the PA at all? No. You hear them in the house? Yeah. And do they sound articulate and clear? No, they sound muffled. But you still hear them. But they don't sound as good as without the shield. Right. So what are you saying? I'm saying is they mess up the sound of the drums. They don't stop the acoustic energy of the drums. And I can't even still put them in the PA because they're still too loud to put in the PA. So what's the point? They don't do anything. It's a placebo. I was in one church where they had shields around an electronic drum set. That was really... I'm not lying either. So unless you, and there's another thing, be careful of. Do not put drums in a corner like this. In acoustics, a corner represents a horn. So here's my voice without a horn. It sounds natural. You know, some people it sounds unnatural, but it's natural. As soon as I put a horn around it, and this is not a perfect horn by any means, but check the frequency now. Hello, 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 hello. Does that sound the same as that? I'm pinching the sound off. I'm putting it in a horn. I'm getting more dispersion. I want Johnny to come home for supper, so it amplifies it and changes the frequency characteristics. That's what happens whenever you put something in a corner. So I've seen drums in a corner of sheetrock with a shield around it. So they've amplified it, changed the frequency response, and then amplified it over the shield. I know you don't believe me. These are exciting looking things, aren't they? Look like something from Saturn V. Nobody wants to play these things, but they do really solve a myriad of problems for stage volume, if you can just find somebody to play them. Fortunately, there's a company that makes a kit. It's a real kit. It's electronic. By Pearl. It's a real acoustic shells with electronic heads. Half the problem of drummers not wanting to play them is because they look like that. But if they look like that, I've even faked people out because they have brass cymbals. It's actually a trigger, but it's brass, so it feels like a real cymbal. I actually put mics on this to fake people out. And the drummer's playing it, and people go, man, how did you mic those drums? It's on the wrist. The other thing I'll say about sound guys, pay attention to this. Do not use the mono or stereo out. If there are separate outs on your brain, use them. Because if I want to process a kick drum with some low EQ, some compression that's good for kick, if I'm using a mono or stereo out, I've just applied that EQ and that compression scheme to every drum and cymbal.
So, I'm sorry, I'm just inexperienced with those. You're saying that most of those have individual
outputs? Not all of them do. Some of your budget drum sets don't. This one has the ability to do four outs. Okay. So I could do kick, snare, and I could do like a stereo of the rest of the drums. I'm concerned with kick and snare.
So it's like you're miking the drums?
So it's like you're miking the drums. The EQ of a snare drum is going to be different from an EQ of a kick drum. I might put reverb on a snare. I'd never put reverb on a kick. Follow me? So if you start using the separate outs, you can actually process them like they're miking separate drums on a drum set. The overhead's going to be kind of weird. I don't know what you're going to do about that. I will let you know that so far the cymbals have been like the downside of all these things. But Zildjian's working on a new cymbal called the Silent Cymbal, Gen 16 it's called. It's a real cymbal. It's not triggering a sample. They punched thousands of holes in these cymbals. There's two mics in it. And when you hit it, it makes hardly any noise at all. But when you put headphones on and run it through a system, it's like hitting a China Boy, Crash, Ride, whatever cymbal you want. And they're going to be the cat's meow for guys who are using electronic drums, because a lot of things people complain about are these. So they end up using real cymbals, electronic drums, and if you're the bass player sitting next to a Ride cymbal, it's like, oh, please stop. So something to check out. And, you know, for the same price as a ClearSonic Plexi Shield, I could buy that whole kit. The other thing, if you don't like the electronic heads, put acoustic heads on it when the kid has had enough lessons to play to a room. Playing to the room is important. I said it in the very first thing. Play to the room lets the musicians hear the room and themselves in it. There's a lot of drummers who are playing in small rooms thinking they're in Madison Square Garden. Anybody know Carl Albrecht? Plays with Paul Balash, Paul Wilbur. I've seen him play in coffee houses. I've seen him play in arenas. He's always playing to the room that he's in. He doesn't play in the coffee house like he's playing in Madison Square Garden. It's a different dynamic. I'm playing what's called for in this room. And we have drummers who aren't experienced. So let's get them some lessons. Let's get them some experience. Amplifiers for guitar players. I'm not a guitar player, but I know what guitar players want. They don't want the sound of the amplifier. They want the sound of the speaker. After the tube has compressed that sound and played it through a speaker. They're looking for tone. That's a guitar amp. And guitar players are crazy about tone, the good ones. So to just suggest that you're going to just give them a pedal or an amp modeler and we're going to get rid of your amp is sacrilege. It's blasphemy. I want to work with people. I want to build relationships. I'm not here for the production. I'm here to build relationships. This is the church. If this was a pro gig, I probably would have less problems because I have people who are experienced and are willing to compromise. But I have inexperienced people, but I want to build them up. I want to encourage them. I'm going to say, I really love your tone, but it's just too loud. What can we do about it? I know you're having a really great worship experience here, but you're killing everybody in the congregation. What can we do? If he's not willing to change, then we got a problem. But if you can break that ice and say, let's try some stuff. Let's try moving the guitar amp over here in front of you like a vocal monitor and aim it at your head. I can guarantee it'll come down from 11 when it's aimed at his ears instead of the pastor's wife. Because most guitar players are standing like this with their guitar amp between their legs and it's hitting their butt and not their ears. So turn it around, angle it back, and get it up this way. That'll lock. Soften it significantly. That doesn't work. You have a room that you could put it in. We have churches now with isolation rooms, believe it or not. Churches like this. I saw a closet, had a big sign, like the no smoking sign. It said, do not enter during service. Why? It was like three Marshall stacks and all these Mesa boogies, all mic'd up, loud, cranked up. And that signal was going to their in-ear monitor on the stage. So it was off the stage. They had all that volume that they wanted here, but it wasn't killing everybody else. Or you can do what Lincoln Brewster did. He never uses an amp. Ever. On records or on stage. He used to use a thing called a pod, which is like this. This is a Vox version of an amp modeler. What amp modelers do is they simulate the sound of an amplifier with a particular speaker cabinet. They could have a 12, a 10, four 12s, slant 12, straight 12, different mic positions, Mesa Boogie, Vox AC30s, Marshalls, Orange, You name the amplifier, it's probably got a model of it in here. So it's not an effect. It's the sound of an amplifier. And you would take the output of that and put it right into your PA. Now, again, you don't want to give him this and then have him put that sound through a stage monitor again. It defeats the whole purpose again. If he's going to adopt this, then do what Lincoln Brewster also does, which is use in-ear monitors.
So if you do an isolation room, you should always have an in-ear monitor system.
Right. That's right. You know, I've seen the guys get electronic drums, and then they get two monitors next to their electronic drums. So they're putting the sound of the electronic drums through the monitors. It was louder than the drum set. Yeah.
About the pods and like the in monitors and stuff, like what I found that I'm using, they sound great for recordings. But when you plug them in live, sometimes when the volume gets to a real live level, the quality just goes out the door.
Yep. Now, I will say that, you know, in the hands of somebody who doesn't spend the time of a Lincoln Brewster with it, that would be true. He spends an inordinate amount of time tweaking. And it's like anything that you're going to work with technology-wise. If you don't know it inside and out, how to get the most out of it, then maybe that thing's not for you. I'll go back to the drawing board. What I was going to say is, let's say I'm to a point where I've just had it here with the guitar player. And then unlike some churches I've seen do this, they'll say, we're getting rid of the amp, you're using this from now on. That's not the way to approach it. What I would do is buy a pod or something and say, here, take this home for 2 or 3 months, shed with it, learn everything you can about it, and if you can't make it work, we'll go to something else. But just try it before we use it in church. That's my approach. I'm always trying to build a relationship up, not just get a piece of equipment that's going to solve a problem this week, because it's going to cause a whole bunch of other problems. I was in a church in South Carolina. The pastor actually bought an electronic drum set and put it in the church on a Sunday without telling the drummer it was there. So the drummer shows up. Here's this new set. And he goes, you're playing that from now on. He walked, quit the church. Heartbroken. You want me to just play something I've never played before in front of the congregation right now? Yeah. That doesn't work. So, anyway. Sobering thought. All right, so what we're trying to do is try to find some replacement things that will take the place of things that emit a lot of volume on the stage. Bass player, we've gone direct. Maybe we can do electronic drums with the drummer. Maybe we're getting him some lessons so he knows how to play more dynamically. You can also buy smaller shell drums. I was in this one little Methodist church, must have had 100 people in it. Little tiny wooden thing. The drum set looked like something from Rush. It was like a Neil Peart's kit. And like 3 26-inch kick drums. You know, 2 giant gongs. Are you kidding me? You could get a small kit. 18-inch kick drum with small tom-toms. They're made for tone, not for projection. Use them in studios all the time. You know? Anyway. All right. What are the advantages of personal in-ear monitors? Reduce stage volumes. I'm not standing next to a monitor that every time it gets louder, I have to get louder. I tell you, there's some people from OSHA, if they were in some of our churches, they'd have a field day. It isn't loud spikes of volume that are going to kill your ears. It's a certain volume over a duration of time. How long can I stay in this environment? 90 dB. Hours. How long can I stay in 105 dB? About an hour. And every time you go up another 5 dB, it's cut in half. You get up to like 115 dB, you can be in that for like 15, 20 minutes before damage starts. And if you're doing 15, 20 minutes 5 times a week, they did a survey of the Chicago Symphony. The first violin section has lost 40% of their hearing in their left ear. They don't play loud, but they play this 8 hours a day. So exposing ourselves to loud volumes or even moderate volumes over a long period of time can do some damage. Kids are listening to their iPhones for hours on end. Even though it's not over 100 dB, it's doing some damage. It's predicted that this generation of kids now is going to lose their hearing far earlier than we have. We lose it anyway the older we get. But you're doing even more damage. So wearing in-ear monitors is not necessarily a thing that's going to prevent you from losing your hearing. What it basically does is it says, all right, an in-ear monitor, a true in-ear monitor, isolates you from all the noise around you by about 20 dB on average. So if your stage is a 90 dB, let's say, so that your PA can be 100, and you put in-ear monitors on, you're starting at a noise floor of 70 dB. You're actually below the level of the stage, which means you have to monitor 10 dB above that for the difference. So your 80 dB monitoring level, you're 10 dB less than the stage volume. I could stay in that for weeks. And I don't have to hear anything else, just what I want. So that's a big move. Improved house sound. If I get rid of the monitors on the stage, the congregation is going to hear a cleaner mix. It's just that simple. Isolation from other mixes, lower effective listening levels, mobility, that's if you have wireless in-ears, which you don't necessarily need. Vocalists sing more in tune. That's one thing you're going to have to find as an engineer. You get a singer on in-ear monitors, they'll have a tendency to undersing because they've never heard themselves that clearly before. So they're going, So you as an engineer now with a little hint, know that. Pull the volume down a little bit so they project more.
Yeah. Will you be handing out this presentation?
No, but I'll make this presentation available on your flash drive, or if you want me to email it to you, no problem. Some of the problems you hear with people who try IEMs, I'll just tell you this one first. I've seen people do the same thing with IEMs that they do with the drum set or the guitar amp modeler. It's just that we're getting rid of all the monitors, we're going in here. And there's no discussion because the pastor said so. Not the way to go. If you're going to think about going in-ear monitors, give yourself 2 to 3 months to practice with them before you ever use them in a service. Everybody's ear canals are different. If you're going to opt for universal earphones, which are the most affordable way to go, they got different sleeves on them. So people are going to have to get used to the fit, first of all. What's comfortable to wear? They use a foam sleeve, a rubber mushroom cap, a triple flange. There's all different kinds of sleeves to get comfortable in a fit that feels right and sounds right. The earphone has to couple with your ear canal so you get the best frequency response. That might take months before you're used to even hearing it. I would ask the people on the team maybe to invest a little bit in it. You know, give me some money toward your earphone so that you can take it home and listen to your iPod with it. So you become more familiar with how it works. But don't use them this Sunday after you get them. Do not do that, because everybody will have a bad experience, they'll get a bad taste in their mouth, and they'll never want to use them again. Yeah?
Is it more convenient to use regular monitors like a chorus, you would say?
For the what?
Is it more convenient to use like a regular monitor than a regular in-ear monitor for like a chorus, a large chorus, choir?
Oh, for choir. I don't even, typically we won't even monitor a choir. We'll just give them the tracks through there.
I was in that choir last night, and they had them under the...
Yeah, right. It'd be a very expensive proposition, especially if you have a large choir to get them on. I've seen some choirs do this, though. They'll get an FM transmitter, like a 1-watt transmitter. And then they'll get FM radios and tune to that station. And basically, that's what an in-ear monitor is. It's transmitting a certain frequency, but that's a cheap way to do it. Okay. So, increased burden on engineers. What does that mean? Well, it means in most churches, the guy who's running front of house is doing monitors, too. We don't have the luxury of a Covenant Life Church where they have a monitor desk and a monitor engineer. Churches are typically under 300 members. We don't have monitor desk or monitor engineers. So the front of house guy is doing monitors. He's doing the recording. He's doing the video and the lights. He's also doing the coffee and collecting the offering, serving communion. What else do you want him to do? So... There's an increased burden on the engineer when you have an in-ear monitor because he can't hear it. He can walk up to the stage and hear a monitor. He can't hear this. It's going to take a lot more relationship stuff going on to figure out what they need. Sometimes your front-of-house console has limitations. How many people have lots of auxes so they can do separate monitor mixes for everybody? I've seen a lot of mixers that have two. They have a band and a vocal mix. worship leader wants his own mix. Well, unfortunately, our mixer doesn't have a third aux for that. The more auxes your board has, pre-fade auxes, the more monitor mixes you can do. Sometimes they're just limited by that. Anyway, there's a lot of reasons why people get disgruntled with using in-ear monitors.
Maybe not to go on that too much, but sort of the lack of connection to, maybe you could speak to your experience and how you've seen people overcome or not overcome sort of that lack of connection to the congregation, maybe being isolated.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that. Okay. It's coming. Okay. So the lack of connection is a big one. The isolation is a big one. The strength of an in-ear monitor is isolation. It isolates me from all the noise around me. So I can hear a mix myself that I want to hear at a level that I want to listen to, right? The weakness of an in-ear monitor is the isolation because now I can't hear the room. I worked with Chris Tomlin for years when he adopted in-ear monitors, and he kept pulling one out. Kept pulling one out because if you've seen Chris Tomlin, he'll sing and he backs off of the mic and says, holy, holy, holy. And he just shuts his mouth and he's listening to the congregation saying, that's Chris. So he pulls one out so he can hear him. I said, man, you can't keep pulling that out. Why? Because every time you pull it out, you're letting all the level of the stage into this ear, which means you're turning up this ear to compensate for it. When you keep them both in, you could stay at a lower level. But as soon as you take one out, 100 dB is pouring into this ear now, and this has got to go up to 110. So you're killing the ear with the earphone in it. So how do we get around it? Ambient microphones. Take a microphone and make sure it's not in front of the PA. It's at least parallel or behind the PA, and it's aimed at the congregation. Left and right. Or you can put a stereo mic in the middle, or you can XY a couple of condensers in the middle. Some people actually wear lavaliers for the ambient microphone. Anybody ever seen Dave Matthews Band? Okay. They all have lavalier microphones on so they can hear the room that way. They can shut it on, shut it off. They can have conversations with each other. Anyway, what you do is you aim those at the congregation and you orient them exactly how they're positioned. So if this is left, make sure that's coming in the left ear. Right, coming in the right ear. Because if you stand up and yell hallelujah and you come in this ear, I'm going to be really confused. But then you just add just a very little, just a little bit, makes the room come alive in your ears. You don't even need reverb at that point because it sounds natural and you're not so closed off. A lot of people think that they have to add reverb and all these effects to give the space back because it sounds dry like that. But just a couple of ambient microphones works very well. Don't use your choir mics. You'll have an out-of-body experience if you do that. It's like a psychoacoustic thing. Wherever those mics are positioned, if you close your eyes, you'll feel like you're floating. I'm not kidding. Disney does it all the time with microphone placement. Like in some of those rides that they do, you think voices are coming from over here. It's just two speakers. But it's playing with phase and position. Okay. Two types of earphones, there's universals and there's customs. Both have about the same amount of isolation. You're not going to be a great deal of difference in getting a perfectly sealed impression of your ear on a custom versus this one, believe it or not. What's better about these is they don't fall out or fall into your head. They're perfectly sealed. My wife has huge ear canals. Big. I got the biggest foam on those things, and they fall into her ear. I had to get a tweezers and pull out a foamy out of her ear one time. She's a perfect candidate for customs because it would fill up that whole space without, you know, falling into her head. I've got tiny ear canals. I got the smallest ones on there, and they don't fit right. That's what I'm talking about. Fit is a huge deal when you're getting people used to how these things are going to work. These require going to an audiologist. They'll put goop in your ear, they'll make a mold, and they build the speakers right inside the mold. Universals can be had, good ones, for $80 to $100, but they actually have some universals now that cost more than some customs. Customs have really come down in price. The best thing I like about customs besides the fit is they couple with your ear canal. If you know what I mean by coupling, When I put a woofer on the floor, it couples with the floor and increases my bass response. When you've got a custom earphone and it couples with your ear canal, you're going to get better bass response. You're going to get better equalization, better frequency response.
In our church, I play the drums, and we switched to custom earphones. We pay for them separately, and our bass levels just dropped dramatically with the mixes as soon as we put those in. We all felt the bass.
Versus the universals that you were using?
We turned the bass a little bit more.
Right.
We couldn't feel it as much until it's so
right.
high.
Right. And for drummers and bass players, there's other things, too, that we can do to increase the feel. This is the thing I showed about ambient miking. I'll just skip through this slide here. This is an XY pattern. And there's some different microphones that you can use. I'll get into the wireless in a second. This is the thing I wanted to get to. Bass players and drummers especially, when they first adopt in-ears, they hear great. But they lose what they know as thump. I don't feel it anymore. Because there's frequencies that we feel and frequencies that we hear. And bass players like to feel. And drummers, when they're sitting on a throne, they like to feel that thing. And that goes away with most in-ear monitors. Customs help, but this helps immensely. What this is, this little thing is the device I'm talking about. It's called a butt kicker. Another name for it is a tactile transducer. And what it does is that you feel the acoustic energy. You don't hear it. So the way it works is you've got two terminals on here that look like speaker terminals, and you've got an amplifier, and you'll have your mixer. And what you're going to do is you're going to send a signal to that amplifier that's just bass frequencies. And you'd usually use that with, if you have an extra aux, an aux. So I'll put bass guitar into it. I'll put kick drum into it, maybe low toms. Maybe the left hand of a keyboard if he's doing like left hand bass or something. Any low frequency thing, I'm not going to put a whole mix into it. That's going to go to the amp, and then that's going to get to the butt kicker. Either mount it on a throne, or you can mount it on a platform. And you can make your own of these. 3/4 inch to 1 inch plywood with rubber feet on the bottom so it's not sitting right on the floor so it can move, and a bass player would stand on it. So every time the kick drum hits, the bass player would feel it in the floor. Doom. Doom, like that. They started the business by doing home theater things. They would bolt them to couches for the Star Wars movies, you know. And they said, man, this would be great with in-ear monitors. So they, Shania Twain on her last tour, there wasn't one floor monitor on the stage, but there was 15 butt kickers on the stage, mounted in different places. So there was a church that we did in Charlotte, big urban gospel church. And it was one of those deals, too. The pastor just got tired of all the floor monitors. And he got rid of them, made them go in-ear. They were on in-ear for about 2 years before I had heard about them. And I said, you guys ever heard of butt kickers? No. So we installed some butt kickers. And they told me after that, they had had some time to play with them, that even before the in-ears, when they were on monitors, they never played tighter as a band with the butt kickers. And they had lost that all in between the two times. So played good here, monitors. We heard everything, but it wasn't so tight, wasn't in sync. Best we've ever played. Because if you can't play in time with something doing this, maybe you should be teaching Sunday school or something. Let's go back here for a minute. People were asking me about wireless in-ear monitors. I'm going to just say this in general terms about wireless mics or wireless monitors. Don't use a wireless microphone or a wireless monitor unless it's necessary. And what are the necessary things that we should think about? Mobility. Okay, you got Stephen Curtis Chapman, wireless guitar, wireless mic. You're going to make him stand in front of a wedge? He's playing. He's able to move all around, sing and play, but he doesn't hear his sweet spot if he moves away from this monitor. So give him everything wireless. Make him mobile everything. Same thing with a piano player. Piano player is sitting down the whole service. I find it crazy that we give a wireless mic to that guy. SM58 is $99. A Shure UHFR SM58 is $3,000. The same microphone. One's wireless. Obviously a higher end one with a lot of tunability in case you're touring. Which one do you think sounds better, the $99 one or the $3,500 one? $99 one. Why? Because it's on a wire. and it's reliable. I didn't have to put a battery in it. I didn't have to coordinate a frequency. I didn't see what the FCC took away from me this week. I don't have to worry about where the antennas are placed. I don't have to worry about any, you know, bodies getting in the way of it. Money. I could support a whole Haitian mission for 3 years for the difference in price. So don't do wireless where it's not needed. Drummers with a wireless in-ear monitor, it's crazy. He's stationary. The lethargic bass player who never moves, what does he need a wireless for? Background singers? So they're a lot less money, and they're a lot more reliable. It's a group called Blue Man Group. 148 inputs for their show. They got mics everywhere. You know, the only two of them are wireless. You don't see a cable, though, because the cables are so dressed and so hidden. But they do it because people are paying $100, $150 for a seat, and they don't want anything to drop out. All right, let's talk about monitor mixers for a minute. I have a bunch of these down in the room. If you guys want to come down anytime today or tomorrow, I'll give you an instruction on Avion mixers. These things are a godsend to the house sound guy in the church, because I don't ever have to do your monitors again. Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
You say, Doug, turn me up. Turn yourself up. I'm busy. I'm serving communion right now. Yeah? You won them?
We won them in like some local giveaway. It was incredible. And like even the transition wasn't as bad as we thought it was. It's like I love it.
Wow.
Yeah, just
great. So you don't need any instruction.
So
what the deal is with these things is you are provided with your own ability to mix whatever you want in stereo. I mean, we've got a mono wedge here, right? And if I want to have a mix and a wedge, I've got all these things coming out in one speaker, right? It's a mess. There's no stereophonic field. Everything's coming. If I want to identify something, I've got to make it louder. And I said this in the first class. You want to make something louder, like if the vocals want to be louder in here, the easy thing to do is just turn up the vocals. But I can make the vocals louder by turning everything else down, which is really what you should be doing. Make the vocals stand out by making everything less, right? If I have two guitar players, it's even harder. Let's say they're both playing Fender Stratocasters, same kind of tonality. I get two strats coming out of the same thing. How do I identify one over the other one? One's got to be louder. When you've got a stereo mix, you get the ability to pan things out spatially. And the other nice thing about Avioms is you can have whatever kind of order that you want. If this guy wants vocals dead center and louder with these things panned out, the guy wants sitar. I don't know what church he goes to. But so I can make things as loud as I want to. The thing you might not realize yet with your Avioms is because they're so new. I go to a lot of churches that have Avioms, and I see levels all up, 8, 9, 10. And I see the pans all dead center. And the first thing I teach people to do with Avioms is take your four background vocalists and fan them out. Take your keyboards and spread them out. Take your drums and spread them out. And you'll notice that all the levels start coming down. And then you go through all 16 channels, and everything's kind of level. But everything's got a different pan position. It occupies a different space in stereo. It just really helps you identify things a lot more easily than with using volume. Does anybody not know anything about Avion mixers? This is what they look like. So very straightforward. You have a converter, a digital converter, that sits next to your main mixer. And what you're going to do is you're going to decide what 16 elements out of the mix you want to go into the converter. So I'm sure you don't want 8 drum mics in here. So if you have subgroups on your mixer, I would recommend taking the 8 or 9 or 10 drum mics and subgrouping them down into 1 or 2 channels. Now all the drums are here. You have 4 background vocalists. My wife is a big one on this. She says she works with groups of vocalists, gets a blend. Then they go out to their Avion mixer, and Joni, Mary, Nancy, and May all have their own mixes. Wrong. Because now they can turn themselves up or down. They don't even have to project. You don't have to sing. Wow, you're myself great. This one's singing loud. Turn herself way down. The blend is gone. So what I would suggest you do is give a subgroup of all the vocals to 1 or 2 so they can turn the whole group up or down, but the volume control becomes the microphone or how much they're projecting as a singer. That maintains your blend.
Now, for that, would you keep that for all the musicians as well?
No. Nope. I wouldn't do that for musicians. But background singers is a whole different thing. All right, so anyway, you're going to decide. Let's see, you have 48 inputs. You got to get it down to 16. And there's ways to get more, but I'm not going to go into that right now. Just suffice it to say. So if this is a kick, or this is a drum, then this is bass guitar and worship leader, what I would do is I'd want the worship leader to be louder. I'd hit that button. I'd turn the volume up, and I could see how loud I am with this LED, and I can pan it left, right. This is an overall bass and treble control. It's not per channel. It's for the whole mix. This is a master volume for the whole mix. Once I get a mix that I like, I can save it as a scene. Stores 16 scenes. So if you have different worship teams or have different mixes, you can have up to 16 different mixes in this thing. We use it in our portable church because we don't have a place to rehearse. We only have it on Sunday, $500 a Sunday, $2,000 a month for 4 hours a Sunday. So we rehearse in my house. We rehearse with these. Every musician takes this home at the end of the night, brings it to rehearsal with them. Plug it into the hub. We don't even need a mixer because there's a connection. We just plug our instruments right into the converter. Everybody hears himself. We're rehearsing with headphones on and saving our mixes. So all our mixes are saved at the end of Thursday night. We show up Sunday, we plug in the Cat5 cable, we hit recall, and those are the mixes we had Thursday night. We're spending time praying and having coffee and talking with the pastor rather than doing a sound check. Plus, we only have 4 hours to get in and get out. If we're late, it's a $500 hit if we're 1 hour late, just as much as if we're there the whole 4 hours. So it's expedient, efficient, very productive. Plus, I'm not carrying in wedges and amps and racks. At 57, I'm tired of doing that. I'd rather carry in earphones and, like, a 2-pound plastic box. It's great. That's how they work. There's great demos online for it and great demos down in the quiet room if you want to come and get a handle on how they work. Anyway, how much time do we have? We still got some time. One of the best things I like about in-ears, and I learned this from the Dave Matthews Band, was discrete communication.
We have a question for you with the Avion. We've got the system. We've used it for a number of years. It's great. Our worship pastor likes to travel from one side of the stage to the other. He wants to have in-ears, wireless, but have an Avion mixer on the side of the stage that he can adjust himself.
Can do that.
How can we do that?
Okay. Besides the one I showed you, which is an A16-2, the one where the actual headphone plugs into,
yep.
They have a rack mount one,
okay,
which has balanced outputs onto it. So your mix goes in there just like it with the regular one. But your balanced outputs would go to an in-ear transmitter.
Okay.
And then they have what's called a control surface. The control surface could be anywhere on the stage controlling that rack mount mixer.
Excellent.
So it's a little bit more money than the other one, but that's how you would do it. Anyways, this idea of discrete communication. I mean, how many people are tired of doing this, you know, to the worship team? Okay. Or like the path I'm playing like one Sunday and we're using in-ears. And I think it was just a novelty for him. He just wanted to play with the talkback thing and stuff. So I'm playing, and I hear in my monitor, my pastor, he's going, "Hey, Doug, you know, like you're supposed to be done like 10 minutes ago." Okay. So in those days, we had a separate mic to talk to the band. So I go, Okay. Pastor wants us to finish, so after holy, 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 we'll just leave. Holy, 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 we're gone, right? Those are the old days. That was then, this is now. They have this new device now, and a couple companies are making them. Panic button, a cough drop, whatever you want to call it. Radial makes one, Rolls makes one, Proco makes one. It has one input, two outputs. So your microphone, the one that you would normally sing into, goes here. And then output goes to your main mix. And then output B goes to another channel that you're not going to put through your PA. You're just going to put into your monitors. So while I'm singing, holy, 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 I can step on the button. And now it's my monitor talk mic to my band. Same mic. Holy, holy, holy. My pastor wants us off in 10 minutes. Lord God Almighty. That's how it works.
Requires a high level of coordination.
Yeah, right. Dave Matthews didn't have this in the early days. As I said before, they all had lavalier microphones. You might have seen Dave Matthews. He's like a jam band, so they never know what they're going to do. They don't have a set list. Right, they're just winging it. So he's singing like this, da, 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 da. And he's backing off, and you still see his lips move. He was talking to his band through a lavalier microphone, saying, all right, guys, let's just do the bridge, and then we're going to modulate up a whole step, and then we're going to like do that four times, and we'll land. Da, 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 da. That's how he communicate with them. And they could communicate with every band member like that, their monitor engineer, their front of house guy. They had buttons that would all band, the drummer. It was wild. But even now in our worship service, I was using, another thing I like about it is the fact that I can play along with things that I hear just in my earphone, and then at a predetermined time, have it come in. Anybody ever read the Integrity iDVD, the iWorship DVDs? I was playing by myself, didn't have a band, so I was using some of these things, and it got kind of old just to like hit play and play along with it. So I started thinking some ways I could implement it that would be more fun. So I actually had the track playing in my headphones, and I'm playing along with it the whole time, but nobody's hearing it through the PA. But at a certain time, I'd have a volume pedal on it, and I'd bring it in. I go, where'd that come from? I was playing along with it the whole time. It's just you couldn't hear it. Lots of things you can do with in-ears that you can't do with wedges. You would click track. You have a click track through your monitor? Ding, 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 ding. You have to have in-ear monitor to do that. Loops. Right?
Mm-hmm. Is a lavalier a brand or just a...
It's a type. It's a microphone that was invented by Satan, actually. The first class got that already, but... lapel mics. They're great for video. They're horrible for live sound. But for that application, he's not using it to sing it. He's just using it as a communication device.
Are they like really small? Or?
Yeah. It's like, you know, a lapel mic is another name for it. Okay. Yeah. Dave Matthews never wears anything with a lapel, so I call it a lavalier. Okay. I'm going to leave some time for some questions. And I don't know if I'll have any answers, but... Yeah.
There was a slide when you were talking about drums and low volume there. You said options for doing that were like darker cymbals. Have you, over time, you've been working on the music industry, found a brand or a particular series of zildjians maybe that is better for a lower volume?
Yeah, just some of the... Stay away from anything that the salesman at the store, if he knows anything, would consider bright. I mean, some of the older cymbals are going to be darker just because they're older. So... the only reason I say that is musicians sometimes are in close proximity to each other. And you got a guy like whacking on a hi-hat or smashing a crash or a ride and you're right next to it. It's just going to rip your head off after a while. And it actually, some of that translates to the congregation too if the church is small enough. So, yeah.
What was the top back switch called again? Do you have a brand?
Oh, yeah. I think Proco calls theirs the panic button. I forget the other company, but they make one called a cough drop too or something. But it's a momentary switch that when you step on it, it just goes to the other channel designated. So you can have it set up any way you want to. But I've seen sustain pedals on digital keyboards that sustain when you're not playing, so you'd probably be better off having it when you step on it. That's when you're going to communicate.
In regards to electric cars and amps,
yeah.
Let's say you don't have in-ear monitor system and you can't find a good place to put your amp so that, A, it doesn't get into, it's not being amplified from, say, the drums, overhead mics.
Right.
And it's not pouring out into the congregation because it's, you know, let's say I've got a 4-watt tube amp.
Right.
Being mic.
Right.
And we don't want it going, leading over to the congregation while it's being mic.
Right.
How would you solve that problem?
It depends on the room you're in again. I mean, there's some things you could do. They even have baffles now for guitar amplifiers, just like a shield for a drum. You'll see a lot of guys, like touring guys, will turn their amp back and mic it from, you know, mic it from the front, but it's turned toward the other way. And there might not be a reflective surface. There might be curtains or heavy drapes there, so they're not going to get the reflection. And they put that baffle in the back of it because you'll still get some, if it's an open back cabinet, some sound coming out. They're like little, they almost look like styrofoam, but they're foam things. They might be sculpted. I forget the company who makes them. And you just place it right behind there. That helps alleviate some of that. I still think the best thing is to get it as close to the ear as possible. Small amps are good. I've got a Black Star down in the quiet room. It's 1 watt. It's just amazing. And it actually has an amp modeler that comes out of it. So it has a speaker and an amp modeler, which is like the best of both worlds.
We are going to be replacing the drum shield in our drums. And you said something about you'd rather get an electronic kit than have a drum shield. We've had a kit before. We didn't really like it. We got rid of it, but we're having trouble mixing consistently every week the drum sound. I don't know. Do you have any insight for that? Because the drum shield is, I don't know. We've gotten them before. They're not too expensive. I don't know how expensive the Pearl thing is.
I just think if you're going to get a drum shield, you got to go the whole way with it.
Right.
You've got to go. You got to enclose it, and make sure that the ceiling isn't like this. I'm not kidding you. I met a guy at a church in New Jersey, Sayreville, New Jersey. His name was Jim Mingo, and my wife knows his wife, and she's, you're going to love her husband. He's the drummer in their band, and so I meet the guy, and he's like this. Hi, Doug. I said, hi. Come on into the rehearsal room. So we walk in, and he walks through the drum shield just like this. It was a perfect height. And he sat down, the ceiling was right there where he was sitting. I said, I wonder if he got curvature of the spine from that thing. Because he was playing like that. You got to make sure that the guy can stand up in the thing. Also make sure that you can walk around it. I was in this one church where they said the drum mic doesn't work anymore. I said, well, did you check the cabling? Oh, no, we can't. Why? It was a shield. Shield? Move it. Oh, no, pastor would get really mad if we moved the shield. I don't go to church here. I'm moving it. I move it. I have a problem with authority, as you might. And lo and behold, cable is out of the kick drum mic. I says, you get that fader pulled down, muted or something? Works. Wow, what'd you do? Plug the cable in. $250. No. No, I didn't know. But they went without that drum mic for months because nobody would move the shield or nobody could walk around between the shield and the drum set. Do you think the drum mics are really going to stay in the same place after one set? And I've been in some churches where nobody's been behind those shields for months, maybe years. Or change the heads, or tune the drums. I get that question all the time. Do you have a mic that would make my kick drum sound great? And what's your kick drum sound like without a mic? Not very good. It's like, do you have a mic that will make Sister Lucy sing in tune? No, but we really want to make one. The church would buy thousands of them. That's the other thing about Avion. My best thing about Avion is I can keep that out-of-tune singer out of my mix. She's still going to be in the mains, but I don't have to have her in mind, or him in mind. Yeah, Dave.
I was going to say, one of the biggest complaints about outbounds, which is really interesting, just exactly what he said, is that it doesn't sound very good because you can actually hear when you're off pitch. Because usually they're used to hearing just the room and the reverberance, and their pitchiness gets off.
Right.
And then as soon as they get it in their head, they go, well, this sounds awful. I'm not that pitchy.
Right.
You've been listening to a seminar which was given at our Worship God 2011 conference. It has been made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. Sovereign Grace is primarily devoted to planting and caring for churches. We also hold conferences, train leaders, and publish books, music, and audio and video messages. For more information, visit www.sovereigngraceministries.org or call us at 301-330-7400.